this past week, Jerome Powell took the mic and with the strange, esoteric language of a Federal Reserve governor said the equivalent of this: "We won't stop, can't stop murdering your equity portfolio until inflation improves." Makes sense. The last best hope of a near-term pivot died right there on the podium. And so, as a practical matter, the Fed will be hawkish, it seems, throughout 2023. Bringing to mind the words of Mark Rowan, CEO of Apollo Global Management, who this week reminded everyone on their earnings call that investors have now discovered, again, or for the first time, that everything is correlated to the Fed. And they are also discovering that most, if not all, of last decade's investment acumen, now these are my words, not his, was really nothing more than shooting fish in a barrel. As ever, we are not financial professionals. This is not investment advice. Please don't listen to us, but please do enjoy this episode of Degenerate Business School.
Bobby.
Yo.
I was just telling James we gotta pay attention because Mad Money's on. Don't wanna miss the hot tips. And then we looked up the short Cramer ETF. It's called SJIM.
SJIM?
SJIM. Hasn't launched yet though, evidently.
But it's in the works.
Yeah, and there's an LJIM, because there's gotta be two sides to the product, obviously. Oh yeah. I think we lost you on the net. Oh, there you are. There you are. By the way, Robert, free ad. The as you know, Beat Bobby Flay is arguably the greatest show on television.
I don't know who would argue that, but okay, I'm with you.
They are launching the Beat Bobby Flay Holiday Throwdown on Tuesday night. So I was complaining to YQ that all of a sudden October comes around and Thursday night happens, and I'm like, you know what? Tonight, I just want to watch Beat Bobby Flay and forget about my troubles. And come October, it's the Halloween Baking Championship, which is a travesty. Horrible. So I think Food Network heard me.
Yeah, very nice.
All right.
Very exciting.
Can I start us out with a quote? If you please. It's going to be a religious experience. It's from Mark Rowan, the CEO of Apollo Global, the private equity outfit. We call them private equity? Sure. So here's what he had to say. Investors have now discovered that everything is correlated to the Fed. And they are also discovering that most, if not all, of last decade's investment acumen was really nothing other than market beta. And in some cases, nothing other than levered market beta. And then he went on to say, that's why you need to invest in Apollo, because we'll find the alternatives and outperform the market. So feels about right. And now this week, James, Jerry got up on the mic. There's a moment in the presser where a journalist suggested that the market was rallying during the press conference. And then using Fed speak, Jerry said, "Get that rally out my face. The federal funds rate is not high enough, it's got to go higher. So I would say on the Jerry scale, maximum hawkish, right?
The FOMC. You just want to shut that down. Yeah.
Put it right down. Dikembe style.
Yeah. Steve's expression. It's like, they're not obviously getting the picture.
Yeah.
How do I make myself more clear?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did we learn anything else? Like, I don't think anyone, obviously, like 75 bips was a lock, but maybe some people were hoping that Jerry would say the cumulative tightening that has transpired, maybe we've gone a little too far. There are some people still hoping for that. And he was like, no, we haven't gone far enough, and we're going to hold it there, even if you don't like it, all of next year. Yeah?
Yeah, I didn't notice anything that wasn't set in Jackson Hole, and he's just reiterating that we're going to try to crash the market. Right, crash the market, but no, there's no pivot. That's where we stand now.
So then, Robert, I feel like CNBC has made a really good decision, which is every time I turned it on in the afternoon, Carter Worth is on TV, which I just love. It's really enhanced my experience. So we're now in a no man's land, sort of. We closed today around the S&P is about 3770. We're kind of in a no man's land. I would say we're still making lower lows, higher lows, lower highs, excuse me. Still in a downtrend-ish. And now we're kind of at this point in the near term where the question is, do we get a Santa Claus rally? Or is this another bear market breakout that's just failing this week's rhetoric from the Fed, a catalyst, Dove, as they call him now? Robert, did you catch that? They call Carter Dove now because he's Carter B. Worth, excuse me, Dove for Worth. He thinks the S&P 500 is going to break lower into year end.
Well,
what do your animal spirits tell you?
Well, I'm looking at a chart of the SPY, and two things stick out. One, to your point, you know, lower highs, lower lows, right?
Yeah.
So as far as the Santa Claus rally, like, the technical definition is like right between Christmas and New Year. So like those 5-6 days, whatever, inconsequential, right? But if you're looking at the chart and you want to project out, yeah, we rallied. No, we sold off this week, right? We rallied today, but we still sold off. You could rally substantially next week and the week after, and you're not breaking the downtrend.
Right.
So ultimately, the downtrend is strong. I would expect you will ultimately close lower at the end of the year, if for no other reason than tax loss selling. So the repositioning that happens at the end of every month, every quarter, every year is generally the long side. This year, everybody's got losses that we want to cash in on.
We're booking, we're doing tax loss harvesting here.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also, for fun, I sent you guys the guy who does the overlap tweet of like, he shifted it by 12 days. You know, it's never perfect, but it's current S&P and current implied volatility versus his like where whatever interval time he used in 2008. And again, they're not perfect. It looked like maybe. So first of all, the VIX one is terrifying. One of the things that has been a surprise is, I forget, one of the days this week, it might have been the Jerry day, there was a big sell-off into the close. But the VIX didn't spike, or maybe it was the day after. And apparently that's because everyone is so short-term tactical. There's basically an options expiration for every day of the week. And that's why volatility is low. But if you pair these two charts together, you have implied volatility, which has not exploded higher. And the S&P, which is in this, like, as you say, Robert, defined downtrend, but hasn't had, as we say, the final puke or the final capitulation. if you play these out to their logical conclusions, then it suggests, if they follow each other, it's not an exact science, but that a final pukage could be coming in Q1-ish in a year. I don't know. We could see some fireworks. The stocks that are still holding on. So we've obviously had Meta has been destroyed. Netflix has been destroyed. The ones that are still hanging on relative to the rest of the NASDAQ are Apple and Tesla. And I feel like those are like the leadership stocks that have to capitulate for this, you know, the index to ultimately go closer. 3,300, 3,000, you know, a vol event where the VIX spikes. But it's, as I tell you, that's the chart. It speaks to me. It does.
So with that in mind, as you see all these stocks, and granted that, you know, they've all been adjusted for splits, but as you see, you know, Facebook $90, Amazon $90, you're not tempted?
I am. Yes. The answer is yes. And I am struggling a little bit with this, which is, you know, when they ask like Warren Buffett, what should the average person do? And he goes, you know what, they should just buy the S&P, like a big index fund, just never look at it. Back to the religious quote from earlier, I am a little concerned, like the playbook of the last 14 years, 2008 to now, where you could just like buy the index and let it rip because rates just kept going down, liquidity just kept getting better, you know, quantitative easing, the Fed was your friend, that we might be exiting that regime. So it is like, I don't know. Do we have to get good at stock picking? That sounds bad. That sounds like a no-win situation.
Well,
your question, that's why I'm like, okay, well, now should I be considering stocks that look like dog shit right now? Because that's what psychopaths do. Anyway.
Right, but like the reason Warren Buffett is okay just buying and holding, you know, things forever, there's two big reasons. He's not counting on more than the S&P going up 8%. I think he understands that 20, 30, 40%, what it's been the last, you know, 5 to 10 years, is absolutely ludicrous.
Right.
But also, if you pay attention to like the massive profit that he made on B of A, he's playing by different rules than you and I.
Yes.
So it's easy to say, sure, you know, you'll be rich if you just hold on to your 4% a year for the next however long. But like, really, it's a bit far-fetched.
Yeah, here's what makes me nervous about like Facebook specifically. Because you really have to ask yourself like a hard question. Like, if you had asked me 6 months ago, I'd be like, yeah, definitely Oculus is going to, Metaverse is the future, it's going to be fine. But now I'm worried, like, is Mark just getting desperate? Like, he's trying to do something extraordinarily difficult, which is to develop a piece of hardware. And Facebook is not a hardware company. It's an advertising company, or historically has been. It's a social network. And it's extraordinarily hard to, like, make that transition. And by the way, I do struggle to understand like how an Oculus is different than an Xbox, which makes me sound old and lacking in vision. But that's why Meta in particular, I'm like, I don't know. I just don't know. I just don't know Meta.
Well, there's a few things that strike me about the whole Facebook thing. Let me just start by saying that I clearly don't have the vision of somebody who is capable of running a multi-billion dollar company, right? So like, very pedestrian.
Don't underestimate yourself, but continue.
But to your point, Facebook has never been a hardware company. I mean, they tried a phone and that was a massive, massive flop.
Yeah.
If you're trying to open up the world to the metaverse and introduce us to things that, you know, are going to appeal to the masses, why would you make, what is their metaverse called? Something Horizons? Horizon something?
Oh, I just thought it was called Zucky Zuck's Wonderland. No, I don't know.
Yeah, whatever it is, something, it's got the word Horizon in there. Why would you make it a cartoon?
It looks ridiculous, yeah. But
like, you know, you want to explore, you want to introduce people to the world out there, but you're making it all cartoonish? Like,
yeah. Well,
who is that supposed to appeal to?
And to put it in even more NBA speak terms, 2004 until now, Facebook was on a massive S curve, which was the invention of social media. And it was very, very ruthless and intelligent about like buying Instagram when it was undervalued or at a good price, copying other practices from other social media networks. And it's definitely at the top of its S curve because its user growth is stalling, right? So we have to invent a new S curve. And to your point, cartoon people in Horizon Land on the Oculus, don't know if he's on an S curve there. Don't know if they're going to execute.
I've been wrong before, but I don't think I am on this one.
I think you're, and also I didn't realize, I think I sent you this. There's a huge story with Meta in particular about how they were spending all of their surplus capital in buybacks, basically.
Oh yeah.
And it's something to do with the mechanics of like stock compensation for employees and obviously inflating the stock price. And basically like now all those buybacks are underwater and it's like, you can explain a lot of this just by like essentially manipulation through stock buybacks. And once I saw that, I was like, ooh, that's a tough. Yeah.
Yeah. Aside from the fact that, I mean, it's a really bad actual use of money.
Yeah.
Like
unproductive, you know, capital. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's very unproductive. Like say what you will about Apple. And I realize you love Apple and I don't, but one of the things that they do is at least when they buy stock, they buy it cheap. They're not, you know, buying it high and selling it low.
Well, yes, you're correct. I do. If I send a text message and it's green, I get upset.
Yeah.
I get really upset.
Yeah.
Which makes me a monster. However, I do subscribe. I know we've been saying this for like 3 years now. So we've lost a lot of money not just buying Apple stock 3 years ago. But it does feel like, I don't know. Generally, you get to do a long-term historical view. And Apple is so dominant and so thoroughly owned by boomers that, you know, that means we're probably close to the peak of Apple as like, you know, like a high flying stock. Doesn't mean it's not going to be, you know, very, I don't know. It's going to be like Coca-Cola was in the 60s. But you look at Apple, it's like over the next 10 years, are they going to outperform?
Hard to
imagine that. Especially, yeah. And they got China tail risk, James. Yeah. Looking at you because Taiwan, but you know what I'm saying. She tomorrow could be like Apple and Tesla are out, and bam, you know, S&P goes to 3,000 like that, you know.
Whole another level of uncertainty.
Yeah. Sorry, you were going to say it, Robert. I cut you off.
No, I mean, it just, one of the dumbest arguments that I hear as to why a stock is a good buy is like when people say it's not going anywhere, mm-hmm. right? Like the world cannot exist without this company in 50 years. Look, the three of us work for companies that have been around forever. That doesn't mean they have stocks you want to own. To your point, Coca-Cola has been around 100 years. Probably be around 30 years from now. It's an awful stock to own.
Correct. Yeah.
So there will come a time when Apple inevitably faces that fate as well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. If someone says it's a blue chip stock, get out. Get out. All right. Speaking of social networks, though. So Elon has come in to Twitter and he's thrown out all the coffee machines. He has fired half the staff. He's fighting with AOC on Twitter about $8 subscriptions, which has been fun to watch. I know you like that one, Robert. Certain advertisers in response have become sanctimonious and are leaving the platform. But this has been a fun one. I feel like from a business perspective, is Elon doing the right stuff to make Twitter a better business? What do you think?
So I think for me to answer that, I have to understand what is the deal with this blue check mark? Like what is a blue check mark?
I feel like, first of all, I should have researched it more, but I didn't because I'm lazy. But
No, I don't mean that from a business standpoint. I mean that like as a user, like why would I pay for a blue check mark?
James, why would you pay for a blue check mark? Do you know?
Well, certification or something that you're a real person. If you have like enough followers, like, you're not like, you know.
Not bots. You're not a bot. Not an impersonator.
Yeah. So because there's all these fake accounts with the same picture of the person, same profile pic, but the check mark indicates you are that person.
Yeah. So I guess it's like stage one of like Elon wants to purge the bots, make it like one person, one authentic person is the user, but also make it a subscription business. And I do think that's probably a better business model for Twitter. Because if you think about it, it's people like James and I who are, or at least I am, addicted to Twitter. And at this point, this is like a premium tier, I guess I would say. For people with followers, this would matter to them. But at the end of the day, yeah, it's probably just better as a subscription business than it is an advertising business. Because the ads are awful. They don't work. It's like display ads on your desktop. Just like you breeze right through them because you're hunting for content.
So say the DBS Twitter had a following, people would like us would pay to say DBS is legit, or would we get paid because we had a following? I'm confused by the idea of paying for a blue check.
We as DBS would pay.
Oh.
But today, people with lots of followers are monetizing pretty material businesses out of them. I mean, it's basically like you have 50,000 followers. You're like, I have a newsletter or service. And then like a certain percentage of those people pay your subscription fee. And you can be like self-employed that way. Without Twitter, you wouldn't be able to monetize as big an audience.
So basically only the content creators would have to
Yeah. Tell. Yeah.
Got it.
Thankfully, we have no followers and therefore no impersonators.
Yeah.
So why would you impersonate someone without followers? Obviously.
I mean, to be honest with you, I've never, other than like the two of you, I've never known people to have Twitters other than like celebrities, right? People will often ask me, do you have an Instagram? Do you have a TikTok? I've never had somebody ask me if I had a Twitter.
Okay, great point. Because here's the deal. Real celebrities, Selena Gomez, Kim Kardashian, maybe not Tom Brady, he's on Twitter. People like this, Justin Bieber, they're on TikTok and Instagram. Pretty much those. Twitter, in terms of like mass culture, has jumped the shark. Twitter is now like for pretentious intellectual elite types. It's like journalists, futurists, you know, like tech people, which is why Elon loves it so much, because it's people debating about the future of artificial intelligence. Or maybe that's just my feed. But that's what I feel like. Don't you feel like that's what Twitter has become, James? It's like, that's Elon's like, it's the hive mind of human civilization. That's why he wants to, you know, buy it and keep it as a toy for the Mars colony.
Yeah, it's too extreme because it could be like the lowest denominator also. Yeah. It depends on how you curate your feed, right?
So. Yeah.
But yeah. I agree.
Yeah, there's all sorts of weird intellect. You could be like really into like, you know, the QAnon conspiracy about Paul Pelosi, for instance. That's going to be a big threat on Twitter. There's a lot of people into that.
I could see those people paying $8.
Oh, yes, absolutely. But I do think eventually the average user is going to have to pay a subscription too. Right, James? This is just like phase one.
Yeah, which I think we would do.
Yeah.
Monetize it some way because it's such a basket case of a company. Just, you know, never grows its monthly average users. And like its revenue is pretty much flat every time. So, yeah, you just got to come up with something if you have bullion growth for the longest time.
But all of it, yeah.
Isn't the issue regarding the average users that like you don't actually need to have an account to follow an account?
Yeah, there's that.
Yeah. Well, here's the other thing that's so interesting about it. So Twitter is now going to be a private company, right? It's going to delist, I think.
It already does.
It has. So there are these things like Tesla stock, crypto, Bitcoin, specifically Doge, that are essentially just like people who are in the Elon Musk cult own these things. Tesla cars too, you know. And the most fascinating thing to watch has been that politicians, journalists who hate Elon have been using it, and now he owns the platform. So I don't know, the platform's going to get way weirder than it already is, because he's also going to let back on Trump if he hasn't already. You know, all that stuff's going to happen. There's going to be no curation. It's going to get pretty weird. And James and I will be on the front row.
Right, but like for people complaining about that, isn't this an algorithm that feeds you what you want to watch? Like, I'm just going to go ahead and assume that you're not getting news about like Taylor Swift.
Well, here's what's interesting. So like, it's all based on probabilities. I mean, I'm sure it'll get better and better the more information you give it. But if you follow finance Twitter, there's a huge like probability that you'll be into the Paul Pelosi QAnon conspiracy, for instance. Or what do I always talk about, James? Oh, like people who get furious because Nancy Pelosi is always insider trade, allegedly.
It's a seed oil crowd.
Oh, seed oils.
Yeah. Seed oils. Huge. Or like a lot of people are just saying, I don't know how many times I have to say this, alcohol is killing your brain. Like there's a big anti-alcohol movement. It's like the tech bros who, it's like no sugar, only keto, intermittent fasting. That's a big one, James. Right, right in there with the seed oils. Like I don't eat for 2 days at a time. I only drink water. And then I eat for 4 hours, only steak. You know, it's like a lot of that going on.
It's an impressive algorithm. You get all that from like a single search on FinTwit.
Yeah. It's like, I really like following this guy who's like an oil trading expert. He also hates Nancy Pelosi. It just comes with the territory.
But then there's also those like those little stars that you hit at the top right, where it's like you can have the algorithm kind of curate your feed, or you can just go order, chronological order straight. Who you follow. So you have the option.
Yeah. So because of that, whenever I hear people like complaining about, oh, it's going to be full of like anti-Semitic people, it's like, you can choose to follow that, I would assume.
Absolutely.
You don't have to be exposed to it.
But then I guess when you post too, it's so like exhausting if someone disagrees with you and they just call you out and stuff. So it's like, I even bother.
Yeah. No, I just lurk. I lurk.
Yeah, it's way better.
It's a spectator sport. All right. Well, Santa Claus implosion then.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I've had massive losses. I've wanted a harvest and I'm like, no, this is only going lower. I'm collecting every dime of that loss.
We'll be writing these off for 100 years. I'll be long dead. Long dead.
My inheritance will be losses for you to harvest.
This tax shield will help you. All right. Good stuff.
All right, see you guys.
Later.